State lawmakers will be meeting soon to debate, approve or reject new laws on Utah's Capitol Hill. Salt Lake County Attorney, District Attorney Sim Gill is joining me, Abby Bonnell, on Feedback Right Now and iHeartRadio. Welcome back, Sim.
Well, always a pleasure to be here, Abby.
Thank you. Significant legislation is impacting Utah's judicial laws and are up for consideration. Let's start off with a bill that addresses confidentiality. Tell us what that's about, Sim.
Right. You know, this is something that our office has been working on, worked last year, and we're bringing it back with Stephanie Pitcher, who's the sponsor of it. And it's a really important bill. What it is that when we have victims of crime, especially in the context of domestic violence victims, they may leave their abuser, or they may go, and then their address and information is embedded in the police reports. And so the idea is we're going to be actually following 39 states and the District of Columbia in actually creating an address confidentiality, which law enforcement and other government agencies are going to have to respect. So that identifies the address for the victim without giving the actual place where she may be residing, so the abuser or the perpetrator can't find that through discovery and then end up at their house and to re-victimize them again. So last year it came forward, Abby. There were some concerns from law enforcement about having access to that. Those kinks have been worked out. We're very confident that this is long overdue in protecting our victims in our community, and we think that this is going to have the support, and it will actually provide great relief to hundreds, if not thousands, of victims in our community.
Okay, Sim, the domestic violence bill is going to be stepping up the penalty in the presence of a child. So important.
Absolutely. Jenny Imamoto, Senator Imamoto, is sponsoring this. Because what our research has shown that when we have, first of all, domestic violence is a learned behavior. The legislature a few years ago recognized that DV in the presence of a child perpetuates the cycle of violence that goes on intergenerationally. And it was classified as a Class B misdemeanor. So given the severity of the research and data, what this is really going to be doing is it's going to be taking that instead of leaving it as a Class B misdemeanor, making it into a Class A misdemeanor, so it'll end up in district court, consistent with the severity and the intergenerational impact that it has. So I think this is really a step forward in our commitment to say that we're trying to be proportionate with the kind of domestic violence and when they happen in the presence of children, that they ought to be taken a little bit more seriously. And this bill attempts to do exactly that. Which should be a very good change for us in criminal justice.
And these acts of violence clearly have a lasting traumatic impact on a child too, Sim.
Oh, absolutely. The research shows that this is learned behavior, and therein lies the irony of domestic violence, because it was modeled or experienced, and then it is integrated in, and that domestic violence often is passed intergenerationally. So that's because of that intergenerational connection. And then, of course, the trauma. The trauma component is such a significant aspect of it that our legislature is rightfully recognizing that when we do domestic violence in the presence of a child, that has escalated to a point that we cannot tolerate in the traditional way. So I think this helps to proportionalize that.
Sim, break down what civil commitment is going to mean to the community and the new processes that will implement if approved.
That's a great question. This was something last year was House Bill 480. Representative Paul Ray was the sponsor. It never really got to the floor or anything, but we've continued to work on it. This is something our office has been working on. And here's what's going on. When we have somebody who are mentally ill and civilly committed, most people in the community tend to think that's a physical location where we send people. It's actually a change in the status of that person, and about 80% of the people are in our community. So it's a monitoring of that to make sure there's continuity of care. But when you have criminal charges with some of those who are acutely mentally ill but end up at the state hospital, those individuals were being released without notification to prosecution, without having a process in place. So, for example, we've had scenarios of people who are mentally ill, who ended up at the state hospital, who've committed very heinous sex crimes, and they were being reintroduced back to the community. And we as prosecutors were very concerned about the public safety dimension of that. And so what this bill really does is helps create a process now where we are notified, and as well as having an opportunity to appear in front of the court to articulate all the conditions by which that release is going to occur to ensure the continuity of public safety. So our victims, there are no new victims being re-victimized out in our community, as well as to make sure that the mechanisms of care that are necessary to demonstrate their compliance are also met once they're released from the state hospital. Most people didn't realize that there was this vacuum that was there. And so our office has been working on it because we want to, one, make sure that those of individuals are getting the medical care they need, but more importantly, that our community feels safe with some of these individuals who've committed some very heinous crimes.
This is some really significant legislation that's being considered during the legislative upcoming session, isn't it, Sim?
Yes, it is. And we anticipate there will be over more than 1,000 bill files that are going to be opened. It's going to be compressed into that 45-day period. And of course, you know, from our office, we're concerned about the series of different kinds of issues that impact criminal justice issues. So, for example, there's issues about asset forfeiture that are going to be there. There are restitution issues, insanity defense issues, bills. There are issues about gun safety and filing of serial numbers off guns. So there's a lot that's going to be there, and it's going to be a very fast-moving, dynamic period of those 45 days. And we're trying to monitor that for our community and especially those that are going to impact directly on criminal justice.
Don't take your eyes off the Hill this session.
No. And I think, as a matter of public announcement, I think, Abby, it's really important for our citizens to know that their voice during this 45-day period is really crucial, that they should find out who their representatives are, who their state senators are. And they should take the initiative to communicate their concerns about as this discussion occurs. And I think they would be surprised how much the legislators are going to be responsive to that and how few citizens actually take the interest. Because many times, I mean, take, for example, our tax issue that was recently passed. Citizens want to feel like they can be heard. And it's their opportunity. So they can go on to the state website, which I believe is utahgov.com. But they can identify the roster there, and they really need to get involved in that process.
You announced an effort, shifting gears here, to reduce penalties for drug crimes that will expunge records for more than 12,000 people in the state. That happened last autumn. A new law begins in May, Sim, that automatically clears some offenses if a person hasn't committed new crimes over a span of time. How's it going?
It's going great. And I think most people don't realize that this is what criminal justice reform is all about. It's about when people have paid their debt to society, their reintroduction back in without compromising on public safety, not passing an undue burden in collateral consequences and cost to the taxpayer. So the expungement bill that goes into full effect, we've already kind of operationalized by going back and scrubbing our files. This new legislation, when it goes full effect, will actually those who have been engaged in the criminal justice system, who have paid their debt to society, can get back on their feet and be a productive member of society without passing those costs on to us as taxpayers. And so I'm really excited about fully operationalizing that. And this is something that the state of Utah and our citizens can be very, very proud of.
Again, these people, thousands of them, have completed their sentence, probation, parole, and have moved forward with their lives, but their record has been hanging over their heads, and it has been a hindrance and an albatross. But it doesn't include a person who was convicted of violent crimes, for instance, or driving under the influence, or lewdness, additional crimes too, Sim.
Absolutely, because if you're going to have meaningful reform, reform has to be that gives everybody a fair chance without compromising on public safety. And that's something I genuinely and personally believe in, both as a Salt Lake County DA, as well as, I think, good public policy. But when you have people who have paid their debt to society, you're right. It is an albatross. It's a scarlet letter that that has collateral consequences in a disproportionate way years after. So, for example, it limits a person's ability to get housing or to be able to have access to certain jobs. And those collateral consequences then lead to intergenerational poverty that we as taxpayers pick up on. Now, if somebody's paid their debt to society, we can get them back into the community as a working member who has a economic opportunity without these other collateral consequences. It's a win-win for both of us.
Medical marijuana. Medical dispensaries are set to open up this year. In 10 locations throughout the state of Utah, a person will need a prescription from a doctor from an assigned medical condition. Initially, health departments were included, something, of course, you opposed due to concerns over violating federal law. Do you have any concerns now, though, Sim, over this new system that's being constructed?
No, I think this is a step in the right direction. You know, I've been an advocate for medical cannabis because my position has been that you don't need a prosecutor, I mean, a physician and a patient. There are thousands of individuals who, under very strict guidelines of medical support, will find benefit from that. So I'm really excited that we are now starting to move in the right direction. And the ideals of Proposition 2 can finally be delivered to a community of citizens who have suffered from epilepsy, from chronic illness, pains that the traditional medical support has not been able to alleviate, and they can find a sense of relief for themselves, their family, for their loved ones. So I'm really guardedly optimistic. We're moving in the right direction, long overdue. This has been a battle that's been going on for patients for almost 4 years. We've muddled our way through it, but I'm happy to report that I'm guardedly very optimistic that the direction we're starting to finally move and deliver that medical cannabis to those citizens and the patients who need them.
Shifting gears again here, Sim, another troubling case. Last year, shocked the community. A Utah student, Mackenzie Lewick, was kidnapped, assaulted, her body burned. The suspect, a 23-year-old man, has been charged with aggravated murder and more. You spoke with Mackenzie's parents on the phone when you were announcing those charges prior to the charges being announced. But on a personal level, this is what I'm asking you, Sim, because this is an ongoing case with the trial. This must be one of the most difficult challenges, one of the most difficult parts of your job, dealing with family impacted by such heinous crime.
It is, in the sense that, unfortunately, you know, there's those cases that draw the headlines, and the work that our prosecutors do, and you know, I want to do a shout out to both the prosecutors and the law enforcement community that comes in contact with this. These are often very difficult moments because you have family members who have been dramatically impacted. Their life has been just turned upside down. They're going through a grieving process. Their loved one's life is in the public eye. The criminal justice process can be slow and arduous. And one of the most fundamental issues that we have to work with is how do we provide a measure of justice, comfort, compassion, and care for these individuals who through accident of time and space find themselves unwittingly in this nightmare. And it impacts them. It impacts the first responders. It impacts the prosecutors when we deal with them. And it is something that we carry with ourselves, and it takes a toll on us as well. And that's the nature of that trauma. One of the things that I try to alert my prosecutors about is how to monitor that trauma, because we are, in these different kinds of cases, we're looking at forensic evidence, meeting with witnesses and victims. We're looking at medical information, and it does. But the consolation that we have is that it is our privilege to serve our community, to find that measure of justice, care, and compassion. And it's about as highest calling in those moments. And those are moments that, you know, unfortunately, you'll never forget. But there is incredible resiliency in some of these families after what they've endured. So it reaffirms your faith in humanity, but it also is a privilege to be a part, to be able to deliver that measure of justice in these times to those family members as well.
My thanks to Sim Gill, Salt Lake County District Attorney, for joining me, Abby Bonnell, on iHeartRadio and Feedback. Thank you, Sim.
Thank you.